For August the 18th, 2017, we talk about West of Loathing, Hellblade, and we ask you which games you love to watch. Welcome to Level 208. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Dennis Furia.
My name's David Meinsmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And we have an action-packed episode this week.
Dude, guys, I think this is now the most rare pairing of hosts.
All of the OG folks coming in? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I need to actually, I have that data. As I constantly allude to, I would have to throw out the bonus levels because those get strange. I need to actually figure out what the most rare pairing is. This is definitely, it's been scarce here recently, but...
Style is going to be the least common, right? Some sort of three-style variant?
Yeah, because that happens only about, like one-eighth of the time, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I forget how many has Gary been on, two episodes or just the one? I remember he was on the bonus level for BioShock. Was he also on one of the early ones?
Yeah, he was on the bonus level for Walking Dead 400 Days.
Okay,
For Gone Home as well, right?
Yep, for Gone Home, and he was on one main episode very, very early on. The Butterfield bump, I think, is what
correct.
We call it.
Yeah. Yes.
We should let him do more stuff on the network. He's done well. He's on the show.
Yeah. Give him a chance.
He's earned it. Yeah.
Put me in, coach.
It is dues.
Yeah, I was just trying to think, like, has he been on enough to do some sort of like interesting analysis, like I don't know, length of show versus amount of Butterfield.
Oh man. See, I feel bad. Because I might need to clamp down on the banter at this one because we have so much to talk about.
Yeah,
specifically
in the
grind.
Cool shit out there this week.
So, I mean, okay, I'll put this to a vote. Are we good calling this banter to an early close?
Can we?
Oh, it's far from early.
I suppose.
You guys want to banter it up?
I don't know. I feel like if I filibuster this vote, is that like a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a very nice thing to do.
Fair enough.
Are you going to make a banter ban or a can't bant plan if we banter too much?
I don't have anything to say because my past week has been like some kind of bullshit real life stuff and then the game I want to talk about and the grind. So that's my banter. Go ahead.
Let's talk about some games.
Yeah, let's get to the games. We got the usual kind of show for you: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see here. I want to hear from you, Dennis. Tell me about this For Honor thing.
Sure. Yeah, it's sword and axe combat game that's been out for a while now. They have aspirations of making it a competitive darling. It's fun, somewhat fun to watch, to stream. And you know, the tournament that Ubisoft put on for it had a $10,000 prize pool. So not huge yet, but still not a small sum of money. Enough
well,
so
and
that
I
you
mean, you're playing For Honor, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's right there in the title. You shouldn't be surprised. It's enough money. It seems to be high enough aspirations for the game that you think they would fix a major exploit before the tournament.
They're expecting people to go on the honor system.
That might be enough of that.
Damn it.
No banter, 2X. No For Honor jokes.
Yeah. The 2X in David's corner of his vision just kind of breaks and disappears. Had a combo going there. There's a class called the Noboshi class, which I assume is an actual kind of warrior from way back when. And you know, using an exploit in the game, you can attack with it in a way that is unparryable. So basically make yourself an unstoppable force. And the class is already a little bit overpowered, according to the community. And the community wasn't calling this out like right before the tournament. This was well before. This was about a month before the tournament that the guy who wound up winning actually posted, I think, to Reddit, and said like, "Hey, this class is broken. There's an exploit, and here's why, and here's how," and kind of laid it out and brought attention to it. And then Ubisoft just didn't fix it. And tournament time came, and he used the exploit to win handily. And his quote, I mean, this is going to sound pompous. He said, "I didn't think it would be this easy," which, you know, if you were playing on an even playing field with everyone else, maybe that would be a pompous thing to say. But he's taking advantage of something that's in the game to get wins. So I think it's a two-pronged question. One, you know, if Ubisoft wants the game to be taken seriously, how can they leave something like this in, or you know, what's the right way to approach that? And then two, knowing that the exploit is in there and is not really what they're intending for the game, is Jacob on solid ground for using it to win the tournament?
So what you're saying is, should his existing win still be honored?
Son of a bitch.
I'm sorry. David just got disconnected.
Hey, Gary, what's up? No. But I mean, so that is part of the question, right? Like, this is a farcical debacle. Why would they? I don't know. I mean, he's fine. Like, he knew about it. He warned people. He went into it. Like, it's part of the game. I don't think it's like the best thing to do, but I don't know.
It's sort of like if his goal is to ensure the long-term competitive health of the game and be a real good brand ambassador, then no, don't use the exploit. But like, dude, he's here to play in a tournament and win some money. Like, he even did the cool thing and posted about it, warned people about it. And if they're gonna let you take that shot, I don't see much problem in him taking it.
Well, and I mean, theoretically, anyone could have done that, you know.
Especially since he published published what he saw.
Correct. Yeah. And that actually surprised me, was in looking at videos of the game kind of jumping around and learning about the exploit. It's always like Nobushi versus a different class. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of coin flip there that, you know, you can't be the same class fighting against each other. I don't know if that's the case or what.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Was this one-on-one? Because my understanding is usually it's like kind of a free-for-all thing, so where you would generally have multiple people of each class on a team.
In this tournament, it was one-for-one. In the tournaments that he linked to in his post about the class being broken, he referenced a bunch of 2v2 tournaments.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe I haven't watched enough to know exactly how hard this exploit is to pull off.
Yeah.
But the fact that it existed, it was widely known, and that it was not fixed is just really surprising to me.
Yeah, it just sounds like Ubisoft isn't taking it seriously.
No, and I mean for them, they fart $10,000, right? Like,
right.
It's probably just wasn't on their radar enough. There's, you know, someone who on the marketing team is running the tournament system and has no contact with the people who are actually designing the game.
Right.
Sure. And I wonder if, you know, could there maybe be some, you know, boy who cried wolf type of thing? Like, I'm sure they get like 10,000 bug reports a day about like someone is totally hacksawing.
Yeah, perhaps. I can't speak to that. I don't hang out in that Reddit enough.
No.
But yeah. So an interesting thing, a very rocky start for the competitive scene for For Honor. Ubisoft has since acknowledged it and said they're going to fix it. But you know, maybe the damage is done. We'll have to see.
Maybe
not to be a whatever, but I don't see, though, from what I know of this game, 1v1 For Honor, wouldn't that just be kind of like a meh fighting game?
It really, really is.
Like, I mean, you're not see how, like, doing, like, multiple people, like, battle, you know, two teams going at it could be, you know, pretty awesome to watch. But, like, that's, I feel like all of its, like, differentiating features are in the, you know, mass battle. stuff.
Yeah.
It could be kind of cool to see like four on or two on like two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's how, again, from the links that I saw, most tournaments are structured that way.
See, that could actually, I think when you got down to the like finals. Gladiator style, like you do like, I don't know, five rounds, and some rounds are like the entire other team versus like two people on your team. Some rounds are even, some rounds are, you know, one on one.
Yeah.
Some rounds you're fighting like giant bears.
Yeah, like a horde mode kind of thing. Four honor horde mode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got a story that I'm actually really excited about. So you guys know that I really like Deadly Premonition. Yes. Sweary 61 is Sweary 65. Sorry, I got it mixed up with Suda 61, sorry, or 51. God damn it.
Crossover.
Sweary 65, he's been out of the game for a little bit for like personal health reasons, but he just announced his next game and what it's going to be. No idea when it's going to come out, but the answer is not soon enough. It's going to be called The Good Life. It's going to take place in the British town of Rainy Woods, which is a little trivia thing. Deadly Premonition initially was called Rainy Woods, I believe. So, fun little mythology joke there. You're playing as a photographer from New York who is there, trying to solve the mystery as to why all of this town's inhabitants turn into cats at night.
Seems pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. It's not really much of a mystery.
We're not talking like mysteriously, like this is a documented fact, like there's news crews there, and then like, all right, it's happening.
It's the thing about this town. Yeah. And they're playing it up as though it's going to be that they're calling it a daily life RPG mixed with a mystery game. So picture something like a little bit of like the non-combat parts of Yakuza, or maybe a little bit of like Animal Crossing kind of stuff. Just kind of like going around the town and talking to the quirky townspeople. Yep. Sign me up.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Nothing about this. Go ahead.
Speaking of, I've started watching Twin Peaks.
Ooh. Had you seen or been exposed to it before?
No, and that's actually, I'm very excited because it is one of those few like cult favorite spooky mystery. I don't know what to call it yet because it's one of the few ones that I don't know the twist of going in. Mm-hmm. So I've been enjoying it on its own terms.
How far are you?
They are the FBI agent is at the One Eye Jack casino for the first time.
Okay. Yes.
Someday.
So like eight episodes in?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're near the end of the first season.
Oh, that went fast. Yeah. We binged it Stranger Things style. So
yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe we binged Stranger Things Twin Peaks style. I'm not sure yet.
Hey, who can say?
Anyway, sorry, back to this game. It's interesting. I the images at the bottom of the article have this looking like a very stylized, almost cartoony game, which is different than Deadly Premonition, right?
Yeah, Deadly Premonition has kind of like a mid PS2 era kind of 3D aesthetic to it. And yeah, I have no idea if this is just if this is just like concept art or if it is something else. Oh, also this is going to be crowdfunded, strangely enough,
through Kickstarter.
That piece is never surprising anymore though.
Yeah through Kickstarter. Yeah, so I don't know if this is going to be I do not know if this is going to be it's at Fig, sorry, fuck me. They're doing it through Fig as opposed to Kickstarter. So
what's Fig?
Fig is another, it's like a crowdfunding platform that was started up by some of the people from Double Fine that is meant specifically for indie games. Its thing is you can buy in and get equity.
We talked about this when it first came out. I'm surprised that it still exists.
Me too.
It seemed like a train wreck.
Yeah, it seemed like it would have been a very bad.
Huh.
Yeah. So hopefully the game happens and doesn't fizzle out on the back of a strange funding model. Yeah, but you're right, the concept image does not seem Like it has an awful lot to do with Deadly Premonition, but that could be a good thing. Like if you're gonna have cats, make them cute and fun, you know.
Yeah, I like the idea of a developer that has so much personality and such a voice picking a very stylistic aesthetic versus just kind of the best that you can do on the given system.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm jazzed. I am jazzed about this. David, what's going on with the secret world?
Right. So the Secret World was an amazing MMO that unfortunately I guess received kind of middling success, you know, combination of being sort of niche, not fitting in with people's expectations, and also being extremely difficult. But there is now news that Johnny Depp's producing company thing is apparently going to produce a TV series based on the Secret World. So, according to this article, it's being written by James Hart, who apparently wrote Crook and Hook and Crossbones.
Okay. I've heard of neither of those shows.
Yeah, well, and...
It's Hook the movie, right? Or is that not right? Maybe I'm way off. I read part of this article. I saw Hook, and I thought that was by itself, but maybe I did not pick it out of
maybe because that was a pretty fun part of my childhood. and it's I guess being run by the showrunner of CSI New York. I have no idea what this actually means.
But yeah, there's so, serious you know, people behind it. It's not a bowl,
right? Exactly. And so it's
CSI
you know,
New York quality. It's Gary Sinise level.
Right. So, and, you know, it's, you know, going to deal with, you know, kind of their setting, which is this sort of mashup of like conspiracy theories and, you know, Lovecraftian horror and, modern day mythology. So I sort of described the game as being sort of a mashup of the original Deus Ex, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Supernatural.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. You know, Crowapocalyptic on our Slack mentioned that, you know, it could sound like it could be some pretty good genre TV. And I definitely think that's definitely what the game at least was sort of being influenced from.
Yeah.
So
very kind of like X-Files-y.
Right. Exactly.
Style thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see this being good. You know, especially since it's not a series that I feel like has any sort of like. You know, real like built-in fan expectations that you're going to have to like be slave to.
Right.
Yeah, they have
right.
a lot of room to develop.
Right. So, the other thing that was kind of just a side thing. There's like the last paragraph is them just being like, "Oh yeah," and a lot of other games becoming TV shows, and apparently Paramount TV and Anonymous Content have optioned the rights to Battlefield.
Oh man, that'd be the most generic crossover
Wait,
ever.
Wait, to Battlefield, like
yeah,
the
video game, like huh. to making it into a TV series.
Ugh. Yeah, we already
like
have Band of Brothers.
Duty. Yeah, I was gonna say like a Call of Duty TV.
Oh man, come on,
Band of Brothers.
What's that?
Band of Brothers is like an amazing show. It's yeah. like. It's so far
no,
away from
like,
a video game adaptation.
I know.
What can you do? Yeah. What can you take inspiration from in those universes that would not have already been done better in the medium?
Yeah, and I feel like how would you unless it's what was that like their kind of quirky spinoff Battlefield Bad Company?
Oh yeah,
I could see that.
Yeah, unless you did that, I feel like the Battlefield games have. No distinguishing thing. Like the only way you could make it a Battlefield movie is just every time the heroes get in an airplane, it would have to fly into the side of the nearest building.
Yeah. Oh, no planes fly right side up in this world.
Right.
Yes.
Like there, I played some of the campaign the first Battlefield game to have a campaign. Was that 3 or 4?
Three probably.
And like it was straight up the most generic thing you could imagine. Not really in a bad way, but it was just like it was Soldier Dude the game. Like I know, it was almost unique in that unlike every other like Soldier video game, you actually are doing your job.
It does seem like a logical endpoint, though, because they're usually all about like high fidelity graphics, and you can't get better than just making a movie.
Yeah, making a movie that is also high fidelity graphics for most of the dangerous stuff.
Yeah, right. Sure, we're taking away some of the player control here, but what we're delivering is a high end visual experience.
I'm looking at this. So yes, he definitely did write the screenplay for Hook. His writing credits are very it's a bit of a roller coaster because he also did Bram Stoker's Dracula and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, neither of which are great movies. But then he came back with Muppet Treasure Island, which is really good.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He did
at least Dracula and Frankenstein you can watch in English class, right?
Right. And then Contact, there we go. That's fine. You know, it's a good movie. But then we dip down Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. Oh, no, pull up.
Wait, at least one or two of those movies were watchable, right?
The first one was fun. It wasn't a very good movie.
They were very watchable. I don't know if they were coherent.
Right. But he also wrote that, like, this one actually gives me a little bit of hope for this because he wrote Sahara. 2005 like comedy adventure kind of thing. It's not a great movie, but it's fun.
I would love to see the return of Muppet like monsters or whatever a la Farscape.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, with Star Wars' return to practical effects and just how endearing and well received that's been, I can't imagine it's far off.
As a random side note, I watched Rogue One over the weekend. Did people not like that?
I hated that movie.
Oh, it was literally everything I wanted from a Star Wars movie.
I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
I will not go too deep into this argument because this is like an easy trigger for me. But like the problem I had with it is I felt like it broke all compatibility with the rest of the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is I like the idea of the Force as a religion as opposed to as fascism. But
yeah, that piece was interesting. But then he doesn't have it. He just trusts it. Anyway, well, yeah, it's we're nerd sniping ourselves here.
Ben.
The bonus level of me just screaming at things.
Just incoherently.
I would actually be curious to hear more on your beefs with it, Ben, because I too enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah.
That's another time.
It's on Netflix too, so we could do a live stream and then I can't. Yeah. I don't know if I have enough beer left in the house, but we'll see.
Ben, round us out with your story here about magic of all things.
Why do they have mind control in Star Wars? No, magic. There's a news story they just released this yesterday from when we're recording this, so earlier in the week on Monday. They're releasing a new magic set. They hadn't released any details before that except for the name. It was called like El Ixalan. I don't know. Ixalan.
Generic,
I don't know how to pronounce
word.
It. Yeah, weird, hard pronounced name. But they released the type of tribes that are going to be in it, like the type of characters and classes that are going to be in the card set. Apparently the theme of it is like an adventuring, like Lost Island type theme. The different classes you can find in it are dinosaurs, which I haven't heard of before, merfolk, pirates, and one other one, which I forget off the top of my head. But
this is literally the last Hearthstone expansion, you do realize, right?
I did not know this. Hold on a second.
Ungaro Crater, right?
So perhaps they're just carbon copying that. The other thing that they might be drawing inspiration from is Pokemon Go, because one of the things they're doing with this expansion is they're releasing a bunch of collectible items at game stores across the country, and they're using them specifically for players to do geocaching with them, as to kind of like simulate the adventure theme of the card set. And so the way it works is these collectibles, like, they can track where they are. And so when you go and geocache them after they've traveled a certain number of distance, they'll start revealing cards that are going to be in the card set for the players. And so I thought that was a pretty interesting, like, tie-in to the game. I didn't know that they were carbon copying Hearthstone, though, so that's kind of a bummer, but. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, and sorry, not the most recent Hearthstone expansion, but the one directly before that. And the most recent one just came out like a week ago, so I'm still adjusting my Hearthstone clock. But it was all about, like, dinosaurs exploring a lost crater. There were, like, magical elements and elementals and that sort of thing. So it just it's sounding familiar.
Sorry, go ahead.
So something that – this is, again, Grevy a tangent, I'm sorry. Something that really bothered me about that setting in World of Warcraft, and this was like the thing I couldn't sleep this week and like was stuck thinking about, is all of the dinosaur models had like wearing like these feathered like armbands and like had, you know, decorations tied on and stuff. Which either means, A, there's some, like, unseen group of people, like, running around decorating the dinosaurs, or B, the dinosaurs were actually sapient the whole time.
That's, you've seen, like, the yarn vandalism where they, like, go and knit a tree?
Yeah.
It's that, except with dinosaurs instead of trees.
So you're yarn bombing a raptor.
Yes.
As everybody frantically races to write down the title.
Yeah. You got it. So, yeah, this is interesting. Will it be more interesting or frustrating? Because it's like, all right, who's got this one? It hasn't traveled far enough. Why haven't, you know, get us our card release.
Well, it feels I like the fact that the rewards go to... I like the fact that the rewards go to everyone. It's just that they're revealing cards in the set. They're not like mailing specific like collectibles to individual people.
To get them revealed or to get the cards revealed, those, you know, collectibles need to travel a certain distance, right?
Yeah. So yeah, the collectibles they're distributing to like different game stores across the country, and then the game stores will give them to players like in events, I guess.
Bobby puts it in his sock drawer and forgets about it, and we never get the card reveal until the expansion.
I know. Yeah, well, I was gonna say eventually they'll reveal it when it's released, but yeah, I thought it was a cool tie-in or like a cool way of like advertising the theme of the game. But
sure,
yeah,
this will be a good way to get people to talk about it. People love the ARGs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
vampires.
I think I would have the urge to like take the whatever it is, put it in a bottle, and chuck it in the ocean and see where it ends up.
Sure.
Yeah, I think the thing with geocaching is the boxes are in fixed places, and like you are putting an item there and like taking a picture of it or something and geocaching it that way.
Yeah.
So
nothing's a fixed location if you want it bad enough.
well, it's not like the coordinates will update. So what will happen is somebody will go to grab that and it'll be gone. And it'll be gone forever because you just tossed it into the ocean.
Okay, so what you're saying is I need a ransom note.
Well, what I'm saying is what you are proposing is ruining the game.
But it could be more fun for you if you do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, if we can corner enough the market, make the geeks desperate enough, we might be able to extract a ransom.
That's Lex Luthor's next scheme, is that all the geocaches now go to his house and everyone has to come there.
Yeah, see, he presses it. Well, because he wants friends.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I want to hear what games are their favorite to watch someone else play. And is that answer different for watching someone play in person versus on Twitch or YouTube?
Yeah. And we're going to begin here with Jaden, who says, without a doubt, Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin is my favorite to watch anyone play, making it so that we, you know, just shattering it right away. We have a Dark yes. Souls in this one. So Jaden continues, I've introduced a number of my friends and family to the Souls series via Scholar, and seeing them go through the game is always the best part. Watching and advising my 11-year-old brother as he made his way through Dranglake will always be one of my most cherished memories.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I feel like, again, we've talked ad nauseum on the network about how these games are really good with a Sherpa. So yeah. Not surprised at all to hear that one.
No. Especially somebody that young. It's good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Ben, what does Franz say?
Fran says, I used to watch a friend play the old NES Jungle Book platformer.
Oh, wow.
It was a symbiotic playthrough. I sucked at the controls, but he couldn't beat a new level without me as a spotter. It took half a year of Saturday afternoons for us to beat the game. Online, I love to watch extra credits play Dark Souls. Some nice insights on a technical game design level, combined with a genuine delight at almost every surprise and challenge. There's a underline on almost practically, but
yeah. Yeah. I have no recollection of the Jungle Book game for NES.
Me neither. It makes me think of a Jurassic Park NES game, which was like really hard and you would need help with friends. I don't know.
Yeah,
sure. We talked last week, I think it was, about the Half-Life Let's Play that had a lot of good kind of technical commentary as well. And I feel like extra credits is another place that you can go for that. It's not just someone screaming at their screen.
Right.
It's actual thoughtful commentary as someone plays.
Yeah. David, what does Nick say?
Nick says, speaking for my girlfriend, she loved watching me play Fallout 4. She loved listening to the 50s inspired soundtrack and checking out the dilapidated scenery. With us being from New England, seeing Diamond City for the first time was a pretty cool experience.
I think Diamond City is Fenway Park.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be a good one. Directing people as they go. When Nick was describing that, I was thinking like, oh, that would be, to a certain extent, a little bit like watching a Telltale game. Right?
See, oh, yeah, sure.
Guiding people along.
Cribbing a little bit off of last week's, though, whenever I hear the phrase Diamond's City, I immediately hear, get your swatter!
So here's a question for you guys. If Cincinnati was featuring a game, what genre would that game be? Would it be like post-apocalyptic, horror, zombies?
I mean, I would like to see it in a horror game, but...
Sure.
A walking simulator, maybe?
All right.
Go through one of the museums, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think the city's notable enough layout wise for something like an open world thing.
It was recently in a bank heist movie.
Yeah.
Oh, did that come out?
One sec.
I saw Bruce Willis downtown.
Marauders.
Huh. Okay. I remember seeing an ad for that when it first came out and being excited, and then just fell off my radar.
Yeah.
Not unlike another game that I'll be talking about later. But I digress.
Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, fighting games have always been a ton of fun to watch for me. Matches between people more talented than me are especially enjoyable. I remember watching EVA this year with my jaw on the floor. In person, it's a different experience. I often get to serve more of a support role. I answer questions, in turn learning something from them. Both experiences are very different flavors of awesome. Yeah, fighting games are kind of right on that edge of complicated enough that I can be in awe of what happens, but also like straightforward enough that I can understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ollie writes, if it's YouTube, I can't get over how much I love watching good non-bro streams of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Let's put a pin on that because I'm curious. It's addictive, and groups like Northern Lion and Waypoint, Breakfast and Battlegrounds, make even the most mundane games interesting. And a special shout out to Quill18, a streamer of strategy games that I got into after the WAF on Masters of Orion 2. Very good guy, very detailed descriptions of what and why he does things.
So I second this. I really enjoyed watching Dennis play Plunkbat.
Right.
Oh yeah. That was
yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I have not watched streams of PlayerUnknown's Battleground. I'm very excited to play this game. Just because it seems like I need to harness the moment sooner rather than later. But I don't, our bro, why bros?
why bros in any facet of life?
Well, true. But like, what is it about Plunkbat that brings bros to it specifically to stream? It seems, does anybody here have experience with like,
to be fair, it is a bit of like a psychopath simulator, isn't it?
Kind of.
Less so than H1Z1, but yes.
Right.
It lends itself to the screaming at your screen that I referenced earlier. There's a lot of opportunities to do that if you dive into a heavily populated area and then you're, you know, around 600 people that have no weapons and there's a bunch of weapons lying around on the ground, ready to go.
Yeah. You were going to say something, Ben?
Yeah, I think the only person I've seen stream this is Jonathan Blow, the guy who made the Witness and Braid, who's like the least bro-y guy out there. Yeah. And so it's funny to watch him play the game, especially if he gets frustrated. But yeah.
Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I really enjoyed watching someone who is a master of hard games play, regardless of if it's in person, on Twitch or YouTube. I consider myself a good game player and have beaten many of the so-called NES hard games, but seeing someone who is so much better at them than me without cheating or glitches is a blast to watch. The skill and time commitment to master a game like Gradius V or Ikaruga or Battletoads or Metroid never ceases to amaze and impress me. Oh, if I could be 20 years younger again and have my young man reflexes again.
Yeah. Yep.
It's funny how there's kind of a time cap on or an age limit on being able to be professional, quote unquote, in video games, the same way there is in professional athletics.
Yeah. Except instead of ruining your knees, you ruin your finger joints.
Sure. Yeah. Is it true or is it a myth that like StarCraft players will have people massage their hands between rounds or something?
That sounds like something that would have happened once and then okay. It would have been blown out of proportion.
Yeah. I'll have to Google it at some point.
Yeah. David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I watch extra credits for Dark Souls. This was the reason I found Bonfireside Chat, as they referenced you guys. I watched their Sonic Generation series, too.
Oh, shit. Sonic Mania came out today.
It did.
Yeah, sorry.
You know the kind of, like, it has been a big week game and news-wise when that doesn't make it onto our brief.
Well, I mean, also, we generally don't talk about games the day that they come out either. So true.
We can now since we're released so much faster.
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. No, I need to get pop that bad boy on my Switch for when I'm out of town this week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh.
What was Sonic Generations? I missed that one.
That was late Xbox 360 era when they were trying to recapture some of the, hey guys, remember how good Sonic was in the 90s? Let's mix modern style Sonic gameplay with classic Sonic and go back and forth, not understanding that what they did was make a product that was still fully one half a thing nobody wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. So they made a product for nobody at all.
The consumer segmentation they had was perfect for it.
Right. Dennis, what does Andrew say?
Andrew says, I don't have any in real life friends who game, so all I do is watch others play online. Speedrunning marathons like GDQ are a lot of fun, especially considering the amount of time, dedication, and skill it takes to break these games. Also, the majority of streamers I watch on YouTube or Twitch are Mario Maker players, such as Carl Sagan 42 and Grand Pooh Bear. There's never a shortage of levels for them to play. Lately, most of them have been playing ROM hacks, like Super Dram World 2. I like this idea that, you know, for these games, like I could see something like this being good for Little Big Planet 2 as well, if Little Big Planet was a little more challenging. Right. Where it's like, I'm going to watch you because you're really good at the game and you serve as a curator of the most interesting things in the game too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they're you know, kind of this with the fighting games thing is I feel like there's maybe a niche of like games that I either can't or don't want to play but want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people, when I was streaming more frequently doing survival horror games, that was something people said, was like, oh, I don't like playing these games. I actually kind of hate them, but it's fun to watch somebody do the cool stuff.
Yeah,
it's like I don't like watching horror movies, but I'll read the synopses.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
To be exposed to the ideas at the very least, because horror movies have great ideas.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it really disappoints me that Wikipedia has started cracking down on articles that just straight up synopsis dump movies.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I had no idea.
Why would they crack down on that?
Because it's not particularly encyclopedic.
Yeah. Tim writes, because I don't have the time or patience these days to play them myself, I enjoy watching Let's Plays of classic JRPGs. H.C. Bailey's run through Chrono Cross is one of my favorites. More, he has this in parentheses. I imagine this is a joke from that stream. More party members. Of course, I've also watched hours and hours of everyone playing through Soulsborne games whenever I wasn't able to play them myself. K-Plays being unquestionably the best. K-Plays is great. Like she does those games. Like her notable one, and she's done a lot of stuff, but went into Dark Souls completely blind. Like, had no idea. Just like, hey, I'm sitting down playing Dark Souls.
Nice.
And figuring it out. Yeah. Very good. Ben, what does Douglas say?
Douglas says, I watch a lot of Twitch, and I always love watching speedruns of Super Metroid and The Legend of Zelda. But which Zelda?
Yeah. Legend of Zelda.
There's only one inclusive. Now with... Yeah, so there's only one now with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, in fact, Breath of the Wild will instantly annihilate and dissolve any Zelda game that you put next to it.
So before, all the Zeldas were in the same universe, and now that universe is like doesn't exist.
Right.
All right, got it.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is no more complicated than the actual description of the Zelda universe.
Yeah. Or Pixar's connected universe.
Ugh. The worst. David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I love watching AGDQ marathons. Many of the games they speedrun are games on NES that I could never beat. Also, really enjoy OP Dark Souls HD. Sorry if you choke on pronouncing that.
I saw it had a mini panic attack myself.
I pronounce it as I see fit. He does just an amazing job of all the Souls games, and it's a joy to hear him explain everything. And I love watching you guys play whatever, though I usually watch on YouTube due to my weird work schedule.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Dennis, what does Evan say?
Evan says, I'm a sucker for Gary's mod videos. There are a lot of game modes that emphasize improv and social interaction, which makes it a great way for cast members to riff with each other and be funny in addition to just playing the game. I'm not that familiar with Gary's mod, but it feels like another one of those curation type of things where there's, you know, people can do pretty much anything with Gary's mod, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that probably this most similar that I know you've done some of would be the Forge mode in Halo, although
yeah,
dramatically okay. More sophisticated.
Yeah. It exposes like the source engine and gives you like basically the ability to run like puppets and stuff in it.
Very cool.
Set up some AI and things like that. I'd be very curious. I've never actually played it myself. It seemed a little bit overwhelming, let's say.
As a side note, we should definitely stream Forge Mode Deathmatch sometime.
Hit him with a truck, Edgar.
What?
So
I know what Halo is. I know what Forge Mode is. I don't understand the hit him with the truck, Edgar.
I think it might be drop a train on him, Edgar.
Okay,
it's a Homestar reference.
Okay,
and then yeah, that being in Forge Mode, since you can spawn tanks and things, a viable way to fight people is to throw warthogs at them.
Of course. Yeah.
It's combat evolved.
Oh, was that you, Dennis, who just read that?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Michael writes, and this will be the last go around because we're hitting time. I'm a sucker. Oh, nope. That was the previous one. Michael writes, watching professional StarCraft II players play at a level of mastery most could never hope to achieve still gives me goosebumps. I quit playing competitive RTSs because of the stress and anxiety that they cause me, so I have a lot of respect for people who can stay level-headed in such mentally taxing games. Also, one of the first speedruns I watched was a nearly two-hour Mario 64 run for all 120 stars. I had never seen anything like it, and was mesmerized from start to finish.
For sure.
Yeah. Again, watching games that you cannot yourself play for reasons.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says, I like watching people play higher level Hearthstone and Plunkbat. I watch Twitch on my Roku, and I have a few that I rotate through. I do occasionally catch some laser guy as well, though not as often. To answer twice, my wife would watch me play through Metal Gear Solid. She enjoyed the story, though. She enjoyed the story through it, as well as hanging out with me.
There's definitely a genre of game that is good for watching. The Telltale ones, obviously, but then I'm thinking more like your Uncharted's and your Metal Gear Solids and anything with lots of cutscenes.
Yeah. This is a question for you, Dennis. Have you had Jen watch you play an Uncharted game?
She watched a good portion of Uncharted 3, I think.
Because my sense would be that the shooting portions would be just deadly boring.
See, that's the trick question, is Uncharted 3 never had more than 5 seconds between a cutscene, so. Never miss an opportunity to bang on that game.
Disappointed you. Uncharted 3 knows what it did.
We just have a cutscene every 5 seconds.
Let's see. Ben, what does... David, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, shout out to Mr. Cole Ross for Silent Hill 4 The Room videos. That's the kind of stuff I like to watch. Good old horror games. I defined a ton of good streamers for it. I can't stand the ridiculous over-the-top jump scare reactions.
Yeah.
I feel Christopher's encyclopedic watching of horror movies, I'm surprised he has time to watch people stream.
Just got two monitors up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So
I will say, just randomly on a similar thing, I despise horror movies, but I really enjoy vicariously being excited about them through Chris.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then Dennis, round us out with Thomas.
Yeah. Thomas says, Marison Thomas.
I did not. So they gave us a pronunciation guide for their surname, or what I think is their surname. And I do not know how to pronounce their first name.
We're going to go with Marison Thomas, and we're going to say, I really enjoy watching blind playthroughs of single player games I've already finished. Shorter games like Cave Story or Link's Awakening are my bread and butter. I recently played through Paper Mario with a friend on the Wii U, which was cool because you can have two separate controllers acting as the player one port, so we could tag team the game together easily.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I didn't realize you could do that on the Wii U. Yeah, and then Thomas says something very nice about the show. Thank you. I think this is the first time you've commented. I don't know that I've seen your name before. So welcome.
Yeah. I like what the Mario games have done with kind of acknowledging there are people that are going to be watching with the Star Catchers.
Yeah.
If you remember the Super Mario Galaxy games, you could have a second controller, just kind of one player could point at the screen and pick up Star Bits or whatever they were. Jen played the main game and I picked up Star Bits for both those. And it was a blast. Gave you just enough interactivity to stay engaged.
Yeah. No, we heaped a lot of praise on that during the WAF about Super Mario Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do mine real quick. I tend to not watch people play games. I don't know if that's because I grew up as a younger brother. You know, that would do it. Like, oh, when is it going to be my turn? Well, whenever Chris, tells you it can
goes
be.
Goes to sleep.
Right, right. So I don't watch a lot of people play games. The most fun that I've had watching people play games is actually us when we were in the dorms 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when we were doing like passing off the controller on Shadow of the Colossus and Resident Evil 4 and stuff like that, going over and watching you play Silent Hill 2, Dennis. I think it's less about the game and more about the folks.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So that's my answer. That's the most fun that I've had, but I don't do an awful lot of watching these days.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Ben, how about you?
For me, it's not a specific game, but it's just as long as it's like a really good game. I love making people play a really good game and just watching how they react to it. It's like, because it's like you get to experience it again for the first time. Yeah. So like some of the ones that I could think of off the top of my head, which I'll just say a bunch of names that we talk about all the time. Shadow of the Colossus, Journey, Limbo, Inside, Last of Us, Portal 2, Walking Dead. Like all those games are just The Witness. All those are a lot of fun to watch somebody come into fresh and see how it works.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. So I think for me, there's kind of two things. One is a big thing for me is I really love just anything where the person who's playing it or watching it or whatever is super excited about it. Like, I feel like what I usually want to get from like a Let's Play or something like that is I want someone who thinks this is the greatest game ever basically explaining to me why it's the greatest game ever.
Yeah, making their case.
Yeah. And but I think probably more for me, it's less what game and more like people I like to watch. Like I really enjoy I watch a lot of Jesse Cox's Let's Plays.
Why do I know that name?
You know, just kind of finding a person that who's like, especially in like decision based games, who tends to choose the decisions that you're interested in.
Yeah.
For sure. I like where I would draw a line between like the, you know, thinks this is the greatest game in the world or is super excited, not the cynical, like, hey, I'm going to mug reactions for the crowd type of thing, but is genuinely like into it.
Yeah.
I think more like this isn't games, but like I really got into for a while, you know, when I was watching like, you know, kind of like you're saying with Twin Peaks, watching a lot of, you know, old genre shows on Netflix. I really enjoyed finding ones that had a AV Club's you know commentary for each episode.
Yeah.
And you know, and just reading kind of their, you know, semi-intellectual like you know kind of analysis of like why a given episode was awesome.
Sure. Yeah. Do they do that in a way that is non-spoilery for future episodes?
Generally speaking, yes. From what I've seen, like there's two things. One, for a lot of them now, so like a lot of the Netflix original series, they'll do it as it comes out. So, or as they're watching it. And then also, you know, most of them I've seen, you know, the most they get to spoilers would just be maybe like indicating that a certain thing like, you know, became a motif or some, you know, something like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is the first time that we're at place and you're like, oh, I didn't realize this was going to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have seen that kind of wrong. Like, I know the commentary for the most recent series of Daredevil is just shit, and that probably made me enjoy the season even less than I otherwise would have.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, I went through a phase where I played League of Legends long enough to learn it, but have not played the game in forever. But it's still probably my favorite thing to watch on Twitch, simply because that like there's always something on, and there's usually high level play and good commentary. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun to watch, even though I don't know if I'd go back into that game under any circumstances, because I'm so rusty and was already so bad that I don't know what would happen. I think I might just insta destroy our base. But yeah, so that one definitely for online. In person, it's totally cheating, but the Jackbox games.
Yeah.
I've had a couple times where either just because of the game we were playing or the number of people in the room, I wasn't on a controller, but it's still so much fun to just see everyone play and have a good time. It's a great party game.
Yeah.
Which, no shit, Sherlock, right?
Right. Those feel very similar to like a board game to me. Like,
oh, yeah,
a,
sure.
Like a light board game, like a Pictionary or whatever. Especially mm-hmm. the ones mm-hmm. that are directly inspired by Pictionary.
Party game.
Yeah.
Party game, the party game.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for them to go up on Tuesday afternoons, thanks to Dennis and Jala, who generally take the charge on those. Yeah. I forget how to end this, so...
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing for the past week or period of time or so. Let's see here. I forget who was not here last time.
So if it's David. Relevant, I have one that isn't West of Loathing.
Okay, how about this? I will lead, we can tag team West of Loathing, and then we can segue into your other one that is not West of Loathing. Because
okay.
All that I have is West of Loathing.
What is Sounds West like of Loathing?
Oh, it's funny that
I'm
you asked.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. So, West of Loathing, it is the game that is made by the Kingdom of Loathing people, our friends at Asymmetric, also a large number of the people who are on the Video Games Hot Dog podcast. Disclosure here, they are buddies. Ultra disclosure, like, there are jokes based on the duck feed shows in the game.
Cool.
Like, there are locations, so that there are two locations, one named after me, one named after Gary. And if you talk to your partners in either of them, their dialogue will include sly references to even this show.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Really? I missed a reference to this show.
Yeah. Each of the pards will say something at either location.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I before I called it quits, I was like, well, I'll load up new games with each of the partners and go to these, you know, go and read this, because they were nice enough to put it in there. I want to see it. I'm not putting that out there as a way to, like, aggrandize ourselves, although that sure. is really cool. Like, I'd mind grinning ear to ear for that part of it and throughout the entire game, because it's very delightful. But also to say, like, take our praise with a grain of salt, because these are buds.
So I went into it, you know, long time being a fan of Kingdom of Loathing, and then, you know, also, you know, knowing them as, you know, friends that, you know, knowing that they were friends of the network. So although I didn't know that there were, you know, was any allusions to the network, and it was actually a particularly, you know, even outside of just that, obviously being cool, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed, basically, I guess one of the mechanics is, you know, when you're traveling from place to place, you get a random encounter, and one of them is, you know, a chance of uncovering a new area.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I uncovered the area, which is like the I don't know, the coal mines or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, spelled K-O-L-E. So it was a fun thing where I'm immediately like, wait a minute. That's not how you normally spell that.
Wait a minute. Yeah. And it's right next to Butterfield Ranch. Yeah.
See, I discovered the mines before that. So yep. It was just a thing where, like, I immediately knew maybe something's up, but wasn't sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about what this game actually is, because if it's not clear, like, I fucking love it. It is so good. So it is not like a browser energy based kind of thing like their main game is, like Kingdom of Loathing is. This is its own packaged up product that is kind of like, let's say, like, one part kind of like turn based RPG and another part like adventure game kind mm-hmm. of deal. And that is only like maybe like one tenth of what makes this good, because this is, I think the game that is the densest with jokes that I have ever seen. They do not waste an opportunity to make something funny and worth reading and worth checking out. Like, they spared no expense to, like, draw up new assets for the particular goof 'em up that they wanted to make. Now, this is, you know, stick figures. You know, it's a black and white stick figure game, so...
The assets is pretty generous.
But, like, holds together. It looks really good. You know, I like that art style, the Kingdom Clothing art style, and it's awesome to see it in motion like this. It is a surprisingly good-looking game, you know, that you wouldn't believe that based on the description. But just the writing in this is so fucking on point. And, you know, again, caveat. I don't know if I'm just hearing Zach and Riff's voice when I'm getting this, but like, when I'm playing this, but it comes through so strong. And, you know, for me, somebody who has kind of fallen away from Kingdom of Loathing after I played it, you know, intermittently for a while, it's great to go into this. It's, you know, something that is far more approachable and surfaces this thing that is undoubtedly the most special thing about it to me in the way that I play this stuff, right?
So yeah, like, I guess we should probably say, you know, it definitely does not require you to have played Kingdom of Loathing.
Thank you.
Yeah. To get into, there are a couple of, you know, there's a couple of like references to it, but they tend to be fairly oblique.
They don't get in the way of anything. Like,
right, it, exactly.
Like, knowledge of the Kingdom of Loathing is not actually a barrier, to like understanding the broad humor of this.
I am spending an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out if they're set in the same universe because it's a little ambiguous.
Oh, and they're very cagey about that when people ask them about it.
Yeah, so there's like... There's definite references to things like people and, you know, places, events that show up in Kingdom of Loathing. Again, very more name drops than anything else.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's also explicitly references to like real world things. So like, you know, they're working on a, you know, transcontinental railroad to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone references something that happened back in Tennessee.
Right.
So it's kind of ambiguous.
Right.
I'm trying to come up with a cool high fantasy way to say San Francisco, but
they call it Frisco in the game. But, you know, that's also his thing. So like it is like a Western pastiche, but like all of the humor in it is incredibly good-hearted. Like, mm-hmm. It's not profane, you know, and anybody who's listening to the shows knows that, like, that's not a limitation that I hold myself to. But it is just funny and absurd nonetheless. Like, it is done with affection for, like, Western tropes and stuff. You know, you start out as, like, the young kid, you know, heading out to, like, you know, get his fortune. But everything is just really surreal, you know, as it would be.
You know, it sort of reminds me of read a you know, actually this maybe was an AV Club or something, you know, review of basically why you know, Spaceballs and Blazing Saddles and stuff like that was so good. And it made the argument that like even if Star Wars had never existed, Spaceballs would still be a good movie. And I feel like there's a little bit of that in this where, like, yeah, it's like a, you know, kind of a parody of Western stuff, but it's also stands on its own as a fun Western.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a great standard to hold all kinds of parody to.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have some kind of affection for the thing you are going after. Otherwise, you're like your movie 43 or something like that. Like, it's... Yeah.
It's like, does this have a reason for existing, or does this have any merit outside of just making fun of this one thing?
Right, right. And so this like just becomes a backdrop. It's not like they hold themselves to it. Like, you are finding goblins, you know, out there. You're like, and that isn't even, there's like ancient alien technology that you're trying to like revive that is living right under the surface. There are necromancers and skeletons and stuff. Like, this is a fantasy Western style thing.
And some of it does get into, like, Weird West definitely is an established genre, and some of it definitely gets into that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, what was your class and partner for your like first run?
For my first run, I ran as a snake oiler.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That isn't even the funniest the funniest of them. But he's like the DPS kind of guy and the status effect guy. So like mm-hmm. One of your special attacks is to whip somebody with a snake.
He's a literal snake oiler.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and to be fair, a snake whip is a thing.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm actually working on making one. I got the last of my materials right now. But yeah,
snake is one of the materials a live snake? Because that's what happens in the game.
No. A snake whip is just a whip that doesn't have a handle.
Hmm. Huh. Okay. In the game, it is straight up a snake.
Oh yeah. That was also the class I went with. I was really torn because like in Kingdom of Loathing style, like I've always been a big fan of the Moxie classes.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, the Muscle class is a like martial artist type thing, except it's the cow puncher.
Yeah.
And like I was super torn. But I had to go with the Moxie. But
yeah, I also have an affection for the Moxie classes and the I forget the name of the stat, but the casting class, it's a bean slinger because all magic and pretty much everything in Loathing relates to food. So
I do enjoy the their Southwestern brand of necromancy is referred to as Nexmex.
Yep. Yeah, and all of the bean slinger skills, at least ones that I saw, all have bean related names. So like your fireball is called Lava Fava. So that's about the level that we're working at. And but they come. I mean, if you don't think that's great, I don't know how to help you. But B, if one doesn't land, there's like 10 more waiting in the wings coming at you.
A similar one I love just as a sight gag is I guess the partner I went with is the doctor.
Oh, and same. We have like the exact same one.
Yeah. Her healing skill, she just walks up behind your character, opens up like an old school like doctor's bag, and just starts like dumping it out on you. So it's just like bone saws and syringes and stuff just like falling out.
Yep. Yeah. So I also chose Doc Alice. That's fun. Doc Alice. Yeah. She has like the most pathos of them, aside from the gunslinger, the actual like rifle woman.
Yeah.
But all of them have like their own little quest that they are on. Mm-hmm. And going and doing those will actually improve their abilities and make them stronger. So Alice, she has she's you find her, she's drinking herself to death because she has seen like the dead rising from the ground. Like, oh, that shouldn't be. That goes against everything I understand about the human body. And so every skeleton that you kill, she gains experience from that. And it gives her new abilities, including one. I don't know if this is her ultimate ability, but like it is literally saw bones, which will do an instant kill on a skeleton. Like she just runs up and like takes out her saw and cuts it apart.
Which is really funny when you run up to say like a skeleton boss.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And they're like four partners and they modify the game in bigger ways than I would expect. You're setting out from your little town because everything is hinging around this catastrophic event of the cows coming home. which is the demonic cows from the underworld have come back and possessed the existing cows and opened up all these portals to take revenge on dairy ranchers.
So can you switch out your partner?
No, you pick them when you leave the opening town.
Gotcha.
It's like Pokemon.
Yeah. you pick your starter. The combat is turn based, but everything moves very quick. It's like mm-hmm. a small numbers RPG, similar to something like a Paper Mario without the real time stuff, or a Darkest Dungeon without the instant death.
Yep.
But everything is like consumables don't use a turn, so it's not a very difficult game unless you find an item that will make the game harder. And you wouldn't be surprised to learn this is called the hard hat. that raises the difficulty. I have to just play it normal because I wanted to see all the writing and stuff. Mm-hmm. If I play it again, I want to make it a little bit more difficult. But like, it is a systemically intricate game. The combat is good. That isn't the primary focus of why I'm here. But it being good is you know, helpful.
It should probably be said that, you know, this is probably the game I've ever played that is most supportive of the Duck Feed standard. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk your way out, or, you know, item puzzle your way out, or something like that, a significant portion of the combats.
Right. And you can do that. And oftentimes this hinges on you having gone to the right place or collected the right, the right item from somewhere, you know, to give to them. If this is a skeleton who loves shiny things, like, okay, you'll give them a gold skull and they'll take it away. That isn't a real example. Theirs would be funnier than that. but yeah, like, you can get out of this, that, like, a non-lethal playthrough is possible. You just keep yourself out of certain things, by doing it. The exploration is real fun. It's kind of like old school Fallout a little bit, where you have the random encounters on the map. And, you know, you're not like a dude wandering around. You just select your location, and then it shows your little hoof prints on your horse as you go. And then, you know, once per travel, you will have a chance to either do a random battle, get get some treasure that is found on the side of the road, or find a new location. And you find tools and you get skills and stuff like that, in a very Fallout-esque way that lets you, you know, navigate and get around and find different ways through these individual, like, small little dungeons and encounters that you're in. The reason I laughed when I was talking about finding stuff, I realized this doesn't happen in the overworld, but one of my favorite things, this isn't very far in, if you have a hammer and some nails, you can... you find some loose boards, and you can use that item, when you examine it, to build it into a crate. And when you open the crate, there's something inside. There's treasure. it's all a bunch of stuff like that. I feel like I'm fawning over this, but like, it has been such soothing balm over this bullshit past week.
If you're laughing at all these, like, Ben and I are, it's probably a great litmus test for whether or not you would like this game.
Yeah. So, like, I can't recommend it enough. Like, it is so good. It's like $11 for a lot of game. And if you think I'm being a shill, I'm sorry, but I'm not. Like, this is a very good and fun game. There's so much to it. There's so much. Oh yeah, the music is great.
It's 10% off right now too, so it's $9.89.
Yeah. The music is great. The animation, David, did you find the stupid walking perk?
Yes.
get that and then never take it off. Because what they did was, so you have regular walking. And if you, root through a bookshelf in your home, at the start, which you're going to do because they have all these procedurally generated titles and you want to see as many of them as you can. You will find a book that teaches you stupid walking, which as you're walking, it just does random, animations for it. So, like, now he's slithering along the ground like he's a snake. Oh, now he's riding his lantern like it's a bull. and they all have, like, great sound effects and stuff done for them. Yeah, I don't know. Very intricate game. There is a lot to it. There's a lot of story. There are whole, like, side quest threads that I either missed or locked myself out of, or, you know, didn't see through entirely.
One kind of meta thing that I enjoyed is, this, a long running thing from, like, Kingdom of Loathing days, even, is, in their world, or maybe worlds, you know, always refer to Christmas as Crimbo. Mm-hmm. And they recently had their first patch, and one of the bugs they
it was the first one they called out,
where they accidentally referred to it as Christmas.
Yep. So in this, it wasn't a very long patch report, but it was the first bullet point, fixed a couple of places where Christmas, where Crimbo was called Christmas. Yeah. Oh man, play this game.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the tip that I've been on. Have you beaten it, David?
I've not. I just got the past the first main quest train thing you have to do.
Yeah, the game's divided into thirds like that.
Yeah, although I spent a lot of time running around that first area, so.
Yeah. Any like what's the most notable side quest that you've done from that first like portion of the game?
Oh, that's tough. I'm really enjoying the stuff with the clowns. I really like just that, you know, that mechanically is kind of fun, and I also like it kind of as some world building.
Yeah. The way that resolves is very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've gushed too much about this. I don't have any real like criticism of it, which is, you know, it could either be seen as lazy, or it could be seen as like, I don't know. But I think that like this has been, you know, that like this $10 RPG is one of the best games I've played this year.
Per the streaming conversation or the watching other people's play, it's fun to hear people talk about things they liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it better or worse than Back to the Future Part 3?
Oh, better. Man, come on.
This is a softball question. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. What's the other game you've been playing, David?
Sure. So I've been continuing to play Fortnite. And
oh,
I guess,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, did I mention that last time I was on or no?
I don't think that you did.
Okay. Well,
unless the last time you were on, I was not on.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, I started playing Fortnite. You know, it's kind of the mashup of a Minecraft style game and a combined with sort of some you know, Fallout style, like you know, scavenging, and then like horde mode. So kind of the way the game normally runs is you you know, first part of the game is you know running around busting up houses for raw materials. Then you get to your objective, build a base around whatever it is, and then have to protect it for a period of time. And that's, you know, kind of most of the gameplay is variations on that loop. So it's a lot of fun, has a surprisingly good storyline and some really, you know, endearing dialogue. One of the things I really enjoyed, and I don't think I unfortunately got any screenshots of it, I was in a match yesterday, and it ended up being a thing where sort of basically we had three people, including myself, who were, you know, building the defenses, you know, for building our fort, basically. And we each had, you know, very distinct ideas of, you know, what we were trying to you know, how we were going to approach, you know, constructing this thing and organizing and stuff. But, you know, whereas, you know, sometimes that can just result in either conflict or just someone, you know, doesn't, everyone else just kind of follows the lead or something like this. It ended up where we just kind of all did our thing and just like didn't interfere with other people's approaches. So we ended up just with this really, really, to me, you know, entertaining base where basically I, you know, kind of set out an outer perimeter and covered like each wall of this with like dart traps. And so like that was kind of my approach, is I really like, that's the only real long range trap. So I like just laying down like massive overlapping fields of fire. Another player like decide what they wanted to do is they actually build, you know, mostly I've seen people build just like, you know, their fort will be just, you know, a box around the objective or like some, you know, layers of walls or things like this. Whereas this person actually built like an intricate maze to make the enemies run through it.
Huh.
And then the final person decides that they want to add like a bunch of traps to this maze. So they kind of build like a ceiling over top and then like stick a whole bunch of traps to it. And so the combined fort was just this completely like disjointed, like almost like House on the Rock-esque construction. But it actually worked pretty well and was a lot of fun to defend.
That's awesome.
Huh. Yeah, so that was a really good experience. I would say the bad thing is the game's kind of loot system is really, really, really messed up.
I've heard that from multiple places.
Messed up as in broken? Or?
Well, basically, the way it works is, using in-game currency that you can either like earn doing daily quests and going through the main storyline or pay real money for, you can buy loot llamas, which are basically these like animatronic piñatas that drop a selection of random items. The core problems with it are, one, it's completely random. So there's, an equal chance of, if you're taking, say, the standard llama, there's an equal chance of the first one you open dropping an epic level item as there is the, one you open when you're max level.
Oh, weird.
So it's directly random. And then the other problem is if you have one of the big things with the rarity levels is that less rare versions of a given item will have somewhat lesser stats and also can't be upgraded as much times. And the problem is there's kind of no direction to it. So, fully upgrading a, rare tier, character doesn't in any way help you in getting like an epic tier version of that character.
Hmm.
So it's, it just creates a system where you're just completely at the mercy of the random number generator. The other thing that's kind of frustrating is, basically, each item will have a number of bonuses that you get at certain points as you level it up. And at most, you can have like five if it's a whatever mythic level, I think is the highest rarity level. And those are randomly generated, so there is the problem of like, do you get the ones you want, that sort of thing. But the other problem is they don't have any sort of filter in terms of like making sure that those bonuses apply to the given item. So, for example, I have a one that like three of its bonuses increase damage. However, the trap doesn't deal damage.
Oh no.
And so it's really, and I guess I should say the last thing is just since your class, it's a character shooter to a certain degree, so your class is the item, therefore if the character doesn't drop that that you want, that means you can't play the character you want to play.
Ugh.
Oh, that's brutal.
For that round, or?
No, I mean, just like, for example, so I really like the starting version of the soldier class, whose the character is Ramirez. And basically, I only have a basic rarity version of her, whereas I have a legendary rarity version of a soldier character that I don't like their abilities nearly as much, but that character is just like objectively much better.
Yeah.
And so, there's not really much to justify, playing and leveling up the character that I actually prefer.
Right.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So yeah, that
loot
it's
system sounds like an unsatisfying mess.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see, because it's a thing where there is a huge problem. And like, if you look at like all of the reviews have been like, was it PC Game or one of them, you know, Ars Technica, maybe some reviewer, basically they got 55 out of 100.
Mm.
And if you look at like every review has basically been like, you know, promising game with great concept that is killed by its free-to-play model. And so it's interesting to see. It's a thing where, like, it would be a model they could probably fairly easily fix. So it's going to be interesting to see if they do.
Yeah, it'll be great when they fix it.
Yeah, yeah. But who knows if they're going to have the kind of investment that, like, say, a Blizzard had when they revamped the loot system for Diablo 3, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing. It's like, mainly, all you would really have to do is, like, you know, make sure that the, you know, stats you get on an item actually help it. You know, probably, you know, make some non-time-limited way that, you know, characters can, you know, players can work towards upgrades. And then, you know, make a way for a character to for a player to proactively build up to getting what they want.
Right.
And like the actual core like item system probably isn't particularly broken. It's just kind of those, you know, that glue that, you know, connects the different pieces. So it should be very fixable.
Right.
So.
Huh.
Yeah,
game's still young.
I'm really interested to see if, you know, how it turns out and if it turns out that sort of thing.
Right.
So. Yeah, fingers crossed. Like this is like, I want to draw a parallel between this and Destiny. Only this one is starting. It feels like 3 or 4 steps behind.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's a game that, you know, its concept is very, very strong. And so if they can fix it, yeah, I think it could, you know, straighten out and, you know, be a success. It just comes down to, you know, whether they're willing to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've, I mean, in putting out releases, or I don't know if they were tweets or press releases or what, but I've read stuff from them that has said like, no, we're dedicated to doing a good job with this. Like, it sounds like they're being very proactive in at least communicating that they care and want to fix it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, some of it, it's a little bit hard to tell because, you know, you are, you know, slowly getting these, you know, this in-game currency so you can occasionally basically buy these upgrades. And there's been a number, basically, there's your standard upgrade. And then every day there's, you know, like a, you know, a rotating, you know, more specific upgrade. So like, I don't know, yesterday it was like the people llama that, you know, will be guaranteed to drop either a survivor, which basically increases your stats, or a, you know, a hero, one of the classes. And, you know, it seems like maybe they've been kind of putting their finger, you know, on the scale of the random number generator for that. Because, for example, once this week and once last week, there was a very expensive loot llama, but it was guaranteed to drop at least one, like, of, you know, high rarity item, things like that. So it seems like maybe they're, like, at least somewhat trying to put in some, like, you know, some things to kind of adjust it, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
sure.
Huh.
We shall see.
I mean, at least they got the idea of loot llama going for it. Like, that's the coolest idea for loot that I've heard of in a while.
Yeah, like, llamas are definitely a thing for them. And I do one thing I actually haven't mentioned that I should call out is there is a lot of intricacy to their procedurally generated world that I feel like they should get some credit for. You know, in terms of you know, there's just all sorts of different buildings you can you know have generated. So like I stumbled into. I'd never seen before, like, an indoor swimming pool yesterday. You know, there's car repair places, restaurants, all sorts of things like that. There's also, if you drill down under a gas station, you can actually find, like, a, you know, a internal vault that has the actual gas tanks. Similarly, you know, some houses, you can basically find, a serial murderer's lair. So you'll like dig through the floor of their basement and find like this hidden room where there's like a medical table and like a jail cell and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So there's like, there are some. You know, it's one of those things where it's definitely a game that they did put in a lot of effort to. It just remains to see whether they make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard people say that this is like the cheeriest and most tongue-in-cheek apocalypse out there.
Dude.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is incredibly. Yeah, that it's. Yeah, it, you know. That's one of the things that keeps me playing it is like the characters and story is really, really likable. Although it's one of those things that unfortunately I feel like in the telling, it would not really communicate at all. But yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So that's about all I have. Any other questions or anything?
No. Fortnite.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, who wants to go next?
I can go.
Okay.
Because I do not have much. I just have the same stuff that I've been playing, like, in general, so I have nothing to say about them. But I've still been playing Fidel, still been playing Rocket League, still been playing Magic, and still been playing Factorio. Factorio, I've watched more videos for, so I'm getting slight... I did another playthrough on, a friendly mode, so I'm just kind of focusing on the building aspect of it. Not focusing on the machine gun belt that I made in the first one.
Right.
But that's been fun. It's interesting. It's basically like Legos after a certain amount where seeing like the intro, but I don't know. It's weird. Just seeing the different designs people come up with for like how to efficiently like build different items is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And some of the strategies of it is interesting where it's like you design this factory or whatever and it sort of becomes independent of the resources you need for it because you can basically pipe in whatever from wherever after a certain amount of time. But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a weird gaming experience. I actually streamed some of it over the weekend. I had one viewer on at one point in time, but that was just fun because I hadn't streamed in a while. So that was cool. Nice. Fidel, I think I beat the base run through. I can't remember if I had done that before. And I think I had, but then I beat the challenge run through mode that comes after that. And now there's a third run through that I have not beaten yet, but I don't want
to. So are the challenge modes completely new levels or is it same levels with stricter requirements?
Same levels with stricter requirements in the sense like it'll add a game rule to it that'll make it more difficult. And so you have to balance like two things. You have to balance the original game and a new objective. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
There's a point where Fidel the dog has to choose between his ball and something else. And it's a very tough choice. So, as any dog would know.
Of course.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like it is more complicated than just everything has twice the HP now. Or, you know, Fidel doesn't really correlate to HP, but...
Yeah.
So it's not some very simple way of making things harder. It's actually... interesting and makes things more complicated.
Correct. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Neat. That's all I got.
That's all?
Yeah.
Quick and to the point. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've been playing Hellblade and man, is this game fantastic. So I've been sitting on my hands this entire conversation because I can't just wait to gush about it.
so you downloaded this like on the show last week, right?
After the show, I will say.
All right, thank you. I was trying to get you to admit to it, but you were too sly for me. I'll get you next time, Furia.
I've got my lawyer sitting behind me whispering in my ear.
Probably literally next time, too, with the Uncharted game, but yeah.
But this game, I was reminded of its existence by a listener comment at the very end of last week's multiplayer. So I'm looking it up right now because they're like, yeah, the Hellblade has great sound design. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, it's
Tanner Wolf.
Tanner Wolf, there you go. Yeah. Sorry, I was buying you time by vamping. But I was going, yes. So it's like binaurally mixed, right? Like they have gone above and beyond what is normally done for like surround sound mixing with a lot of this, and really did, and you played an emphasis on what each ear is going to hear at any given time.
Yeah. So binaural is a very fancy term to just be like stereo set up specifically to mimic human ears, or like the distance between human ears.
It's a common technique in like ASMR videos, like binaural is like a category for that stuff.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. Which makes for a game that you definitely need to play with headphones on and volume up. And it was absolutely, I've been doing that, and it's great that way. I was very surprised because when I was like, oh, that's out. I looked it up because I heard about it when it first came out. The team, they're doing this thing called Independent AAA, and it's Ninja Theory, but they've got a smaller team, less resources, but more ownership of the project. And from the beginning, they were doing a whole bunch of like dev diaries, video blogs, like being very, very open about their development process. And the idea was like, hey, let's have this AAA company truly try to mimic some of the settings, not like the crushing deadlines and complete lack of resources, but some of the freedom that makes indie games so great and have such a definitive voice behind them. So you can like one of their entries was literally like someone set up a video camera in their meeting room and you could watch their meeting. And it wasn't like staged or anything. You could hear the AC in the background. You know, people are legitimately talking through things. But so that's when I first heard about it. And then just over time fell out of my off my radar until boom, last week it was out.
This is a developer that you really like, right? This is the people who did Enslaved. You really enjoyed DMC, if I'm remembering correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. they've done a bunch of really good stuff, Ninja Theory. And man, that pedigree really shows in Hellblade. The subtitle is Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, and Senua is the main character. And so I went to see it. I was very surprised to see it's a $30 game. And that kind of plays into their AAA independent theory. Like they wanted to put this out on a lower price scale. And I really think that, you know, after playing a significant portion of it, this is where things are headed, or at least should be.
Right.
Because the game is amazing quality, a ton of fun to play, and has one of the most strong and evocative voices behind it that I've ever seen in a game.
Voice in terms of like performance, or voice in terms of like what they're trying to communicate?
Like, yeah, directorial voice, or kind of theme or direction behind it. Yeah. I use voices as a semi pun, because the other notable thing about this game is they're very overt and upfront about, hey, the main character of this game has mental illnesses. And they put a ton of effort into making sure they do that in a authentic and respectful way, versus just like, ooh, oogly boogly mind stuff. Like, the first screen you see when you load up the game, is kind of, you know, the paragraph saying like effectively like a trigger warning, and we have the utmost respect and wanted to do justice, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, they clearly cared a lot. The opening scene has like credits in it, and the very first person credited is like their kind of advocate or expert on mental illness.
Right.
The interesting thing is, again, going back to that whole dev diary thing, they didn't start out setting out to make that part of the game. They were kind of inspired by Norse mythology, and, you know, had a clear idea for this warrior who's, you know, on this very particular mission. I won't get into the details, but they, you know, they started from that more generic place, and you almost over those dev diaries get to watch the idea emerge of, well, some of the stuff we're putting her through, this is this feels like, you know, this kind of mental illness, or like that would maybe cause this, or, and then, you know, okay, what does that really mean? How do we understand that? How can we build empathy for that or bring that to life in this game world? And they've done a masterful job of it. Just the amount of empathy that I've felt, experiencing the world through her eyes, certainly, you know, aided by the fact that they've created this experience that, is very much in your head and in your ears, with the binaural audio, is just incredible. So yeah, I'm trying to remember everything I want to say about this game. The combat I mentioned is amazing. It's
yeah. What kind of game is it?
It is, you know, third person action. Think Devil May Cry, only it is, you know, a half step slower and a half step heavier hitting. Like the combat isn't as flashy or fancy. It's very grounded. Like everything you're doing is something that a real person holding a real sword could do. Mm-hmm. But every stroke, every swing, every hit that you take, you just feel it, deep down in your bones. Like it's got so much impact behind it. So things move a bit slower and they're more calculated. Whereas in Devil May Cry or Enslaved, you know, you're fighting five enemies at once and, you know, eating a sandwich because that's just normal. In this one, having more than two enemies coming at you at once is a very dire situation,
right?
And leads to a lot of scrambling. There's kind of a focus meter that you build up, and then you can kind of burst into focus mode where more of your attacks will hit, you move faster. Combat is very much about weaving in and out of that. One piece that I really appreciate about the combat is the dodge system. So dodge is mapped to X, and just whatever direction you're holding and X will kind of dodge you in that direction. However, if you're mashing buttons, and if you're playing the game like I am, it's intense, you're scared, and you're mashing buttons, you'll actually do a more, a broader move. So like, whereas tapping X once, you'll kind of shift to the side. If you tap X twice, you'll roll, and go further to the side. And what, like, learning that system feels so well mapped to Senua becoming a more competent warrior as a character and like gaining mastery of the fear and everything that's originally controlling her in the combat. Cause like, okay, this big scary dude is swinging at me, but I know I can keep my composure, just tap X once and I'll be out of the way, versus at the very beginning, I'm like rolling all over the place like it was Dark Souls. So gaining more comfort with that, and then, you know, myself as a player learning to play better, really felt like that mapped well to the combat on the screen.
Nice.
The majority of the game, though, I would say is a puzzle game. Like you are, you know, there are very intense combat sections, but between those are long stretches where, I mean, sometimes you don't even have a sword. Yeah. And you're exploring, you're solving puzzles, trying to find new ways through. It's traversal puzzles.
Yeah.
And they do some really interesting stuff there, tied into obviously the mental illnesses that Senua has. And I think part of what's so potent about this depiction is that it is in kind of its own IP, this kind of vague North mythology world that at the same time feels very grounded. And you don't know the rules of this game going in, what is to be expected in this world and what is out of place. And so you're kind of on level footing with Senua on what here is real,
right,
and what is in my head. And in other games that I've played, and I'm struggling to come up with specific examples, but other games I get the feel that like you, the player, kind of know what's real and not, and you're watching the character struggle with what, you know, the spooky stuff in their head.
Right.
Whereas here it's like, am I trying to find these runes because I actually need magical energy to unlock the gate? Or am I trying to find these runes because Senua has OCD of some kind?
Right.
Or is
that monster whose head is on fire, is that just a thing in this world, or is
exactly
this something that I have manufactured?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. And even then, like this is kind of a Dante's Inferno story that you're kind of going into hell to get someone out. And so it's like, not only do I not know what's normal in this world, but then I don't know what's normal for Senua's expectation versus the portion of the world that she's diving into. Like if she's descending into their version of hell, is this, do things really go this crazy there? Or like, so, or is she even really there? Like, there's this level of uncertainty that just, it connects.
Unreliable narrator type of thing almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Done in a way that you can only do in a video game. And I find that so cool. I think there's some amount of schizophrenia going on with Senua as well. They never sit down and say, okay, like she's got this, this, and this.
She has plotophrenia.
Yeah. I am confident because they took it so seriously that there's a design document somewhere that has exactly, what she's dealing with. Yep. But you have a constant stream of voices in your ears or in your head as you're playing. A lot of them sound like you. Some of them sound like people that you know. Some of them sound much, much scarier. And they're constantly just commenting about what you're doing, questioning you, encouraging you. And that over time, just again, as an empathy generator, is really, really powerful. I have a friend who's a doctor who talked about as part of their training and stuff, they had an immersion where they wore headphones that mimicked what people with schizophrenia said it was like to hear these voices.
Yeah.
And it was that constant kind of dialogue running at you. And she said just how unsettling that was. And I very much had the same experience playing this game.
Yeah.
Where even just like running from point A to point B, trying to solve a puzzle, you're not thinking about the fact that you, the character, are running, but also there's just like, why is she running? And you're like, oh, should I be a shit? Like, oh, maybe I need to slow down. Or, the you're facing off against some monster and it's a better fighter than you. You're dead. You're dead. You're going to, and just this conversation happening that is you / is about you. And it is just really underscores the game very well, on top of some great music in the game.
Yeah.
My favorite iteration of this. So now we've got the puzzling and the mental illness stuff and the combat. My favorite place where this all comes together is the way the game handles attacks that are coming from off screen, because the camera is very close behind Senua and you really can't look behind you. It's got that like horror game element that way, that if you want to look behind you, you kind of have to stop and turn around. Otherwise your focus is forward. And so you'll get into this combat where either you just don't see someone spawn behind you, or there's just the way things went, you kind of got pincered, and you'll be focusing on one person and all of a sudden they will literally scream you, watch out behind you, something like that. And it is just like, oh shit moment of like mash X as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And it gives me chills even talking about it. Like it is the perfect intersection of what they're trying to do artistically and mechanically with the, using the sound to its fullest effect and having mechanically a really cool, combat interaction that all drives behind this really cool story and theme of the game. So if it's not clear, I'm in love with this game. I think it's must play.
You're very you're very enthusiastic about this Hellblade game.
I've been thinking about it a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So good. So good.
Oh, he made you wait till last too. Oh gosh.
I like to think it is bringing out the encore here.
So I heard some commentary. I forget if this was something I was reading or, people talking at work or whatever, on questioning the appropriateness of the title of the game.
Yeah,
it's generic.
It's totally a leftover. Again, the idea originally wasn't something as high concept as I think they wandered into.
Okay, yeah, because like everything I've heard about it makes it sound like it's not, I mean, it is an action game, but that it's not like, Hellblade sounds like it should be like, the next, Devil May Cry or Bayonetta or, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Hellblade is 70-30 combat and puzzling, whereas Senua's Sacrifice is 30-70 combat and puzzling.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh. Well, yeah, I would be curious to try this out specifically from the audio point of view, because enough, that's obviously a selling point. Like it's kind of the first thing people mention about it. I think even we was the first thing that we mentioned.
Yes, indeed. I'm curious, Cole. I've never used this feature, but PS4 has share play. And I'm wondering if that's any, cause it's downloaded. I can't give you the disc.
Right.
We could probably set something like that up. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll take a look. That feature always seemed kind of squirrely to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've just literally never tried it. So
yeah.
At any rate, we'll find a way for you to play the game because it is fantastic.
Nice.
And I recommend it to anyone else who has a PS4 as well. It's also on a PC.
Yeah.
Although members of the Slack have said there's a bit more frame rate issues. It's unclear if that's just due to the power of the PC or overall the game has some trouble there.
Right.
I'm sure the second we stop recording, I'm going to think of six other things I wanted to say about this game, but I'll be in the Slack for that or next week.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing about that. Like, we have two brand new release games that we're talking about. This is crazy. This has been a very momentous episode. Oh gosh, normally it's more clear which of these will get the cover spot.
Sure, yeah.
Oh well. Well, do you all want to button it up?
Let's button.
The credits. Now it is time for the credits. wait, that's not what we say. These are the credits.
Yeah. Credits.
Credits. I forget how this show ends. Oh no, we can never end it. No, thank you so much for listening to this episode, level 208 on the road to 300, and that's it. No. Or is it? Who knows? Thank you so much. Let me think here in terms of big stuff you can do. I would really enjoy if you left a rating or review. Those are always helpful. And if you are in the mood to share things, consider telling your friends about the show. That's kind of the only way that we can grow. And that's what I'd like to see. So if you have friends who like either podcasts or video games, or preferably both, send them our way. Well, I don't want to belabor it on the admin stuff. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at dfuria on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
I've realized we're insane. Like, I'm not tweeting that much anymore. Ben and David have never tweeted.
should we cut Twitter?
I need to figure out something. I want people to.
There you go.
All right. I'm Merkel B on Twitch. How about that?
Yeah, okay. I'm HariMouse777 on GitHub.
Dennis?
I'm GreenLaser in most places.
Okay.
John is coming after you now.
He said most, though. He's fine.
Yeah, but it's like GreenLaser06 and some, and GreenLaser73, and, you know, it's one of those things.
Right. Well, why don't we just fuck with the format we've had for 4 years? It's no problem. Cool.
Throwing you a curveball, keeping things spicy.
Yeah, well, okay.
Road to 300 is winding, Cole.
Stick around for some titles.
I don't know why that struck me this week and not any other.
It's just like I lead with that because that's where I want people to find me. Nobody ever said you guys had to do it.
This is very true.
I'm a sheep. That's why I go last. I just see where everyone's going and then I follow that.
Oh yeah.
Sheeple.
Who has titles?
So I have five.
Okay.
I have Fart $10,000, Yarn Bomb a Raptor.
I have Yarn Bombing a Raptor.
Mm-hmm. Why Bros. Oh Shit, Sonic Mania. And Woogly Woogly Mind Stuff.
I have just Mind Stuff.
Ah.
I like the woogly woogly part of it.
Okay, can somebody pitch me on a way to spell woogly woogly?
W-O-O-G-L-Y.
Yeah.
Times two.
Okay. And those are your five.
Yep.
Okay. Dennis.
I had Yarn Bomber Raptor. Okay. Course. And then at the time I guess it seemed funnier than now. I had Gary Sinise level. That was Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise will never not be funny.
He He's a good actor. He just chooses bad projects sometimes.
He's just a funny. Yeah, it's just a funny man. I don't know.
Yeah, those are my two.
Maybe because his name is Gary. Ben.
The only one I have to add is Banter Clamp. Yarn Bombing a Raptor I also have.
Okay. What is yarn bombing? Just so I can.
So yarn that bomb? Is basically where you would like crochet around, say, like a tree.
Yeah.
So that like the trunk of the tree now has a cozy.
Okay.
And it's like a super hipster thing.
Okay. All right. I was laughing. I was pretending to laugh. I know when you describe something like that, I just wanted to fit in.
The cool part about it is they have to do it there. They can't like make it ahead of time and then bring it and try and put it on. Yeah.
Because of the way crochet works.
It's like live art.
Yeah. I'm fine with yarn bombing a raptor.
Sold
for 208 levels.
Two Gary Sinise movies.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, I'm going to go. Oh, good.
I do want to point out that when we were talking about that one fighting game, I said 4-on-or 2-on-2, 4-on-ors, 4-honor.
Oh,
that was intentional.
Okay, no,
I see. I was too fixated on the numbers. Was the thing?
Yeah.
You sly dog, Ben.
No. Explaining your jokes is the best way to have humor.
It's best, at least the commentary track, you know. At least you didn't do it at the time. You don't say, "Hey guys, wait, you missed it," like I would have. I'm gonna go edit this up, get it on the feed tonight.
Sweet. Cool. All right. Thanks for doing that, man.
Yeah.
All right. Good hanging out.
Yep. Thanks, you guys. Take care.
Good night, guys.
See ya.
Bye.